News and interviews from your community every morning on WKOK Sunrise on News Radio 1070 WKOK and WKOK.com.
And thank you so much for joining us on WKOK Sunrise. In case you haven't figured it out, we are painting the valley pink. We're calling attention to Breast Cancer Awareness Month. The Thyram Humphrey Center for Breast Health at Evangelical Community Hospital. And calling attention to the need for more knowledge and information, routine screening, diagnostic, and then treatment, surgery if necessary. So we bring in the surgeon. Dr. John Turner is here. He is a breast surgeon and clinical co-manager at the Thyram Humphrey Center for Breast Health at Evangelical Community Hospital. He has successfully treated thousands of cases. Wow, his numbers are going up. So there's a lot of women and a lot of families and a lot of kids out there smiling because Dr. Turner and the whole team did their thing. Diagnosis, treatment, follow-up, and continuing follow-up. And so, but you would like those surgery numbers to stay as low as possible, and that is the heart of why we're here. We're going to start out talking about screening. When we last spoke, 40 and up is the normal range for breast mammography screening.
Yes, sir. 40 is the starting point for women of average risk. The starting point, however, should be risk-based. And so patients who have a family history and calculate at a risk of 20% or greater should start at 35, and you can add MRI to the mammogram on an annual basis. Then patients with a genetic mutation, many of those mutations dictate starting with MRI at 30 and then adding mammogram at 35. And then, of course, for patients who have a family member who is diagnosed under the age of 40, then they can start 10 years younger than that.
Now, one time about 2 years ago, you talked about a finding that related to women who had had children versus women who did not. Is there still a correlation there that the numbers seem to be higher for women who had not had children when it comes to breast cancer?
It does contribute to the calculated risk. So women who had their first child after the age of 30 or never had carried a pregnancy to term, that does bump those numbers up some.
Okay. Let's start talking about genetic testing. You mentioned that. Explain what that is for folks and how it happens.
Well, at EVAN, we have a program called CARES. So every patient that comes either to the Center for Breast Health or to the OBGYN practice are sent a chatbot link either via email or text, and they answer a set of questions, and two calculations are done. One determines whether they meet the National Comprehensive Cancer Network criteria for genetic testing, and one calculates their lifetime risk for breast cancer. If they meet the NCCN criteria for genetic testing, then they are red flagged. The day before their visit, we pull their record, and we create a sheet for them. We actually call it a pink slip. And so they're handed a pink slip when they get to the breast center, whether it be for imaging or for a clinic visit, and they're offered genetic testing while they're there. The test is simple. You just place saliva in a test tube, and it's sent off to the genetic testing company. The company then becomes responsible for processing the payment from the payer, whoever that may be. If they calculated a lifetime risk of greater than 20%, then they're offered follow-up in our high-risk clinic.
Okay, so that's how the test proceeds. You mentioned who pays for it. There is an expense associated with this for indigent women at Thyram Humphreys with no insurance coverage. That's when you get into your abilities to assist and pay and to step up.
Yes, and we also, the testing company that we work with typically is very good about not balance billing and not billing patients that have medical assistance, for instance, or Medicare, or they're diagnosed with breast cancer. So basically, anyone can be tested And it's either covered by your insurance or the company works with you. And then, of course, we have resources if needed.
But it's a significantly important screening for some women. So one way or another, you got to work and try to get through that. Tell us about what these tests tell you. Dig a little bit more for the 25% and for the 75%.
So we do a 36-gene panel on patients who are candidates for genetic testing. And the risk, it depends on the gene that they're positive for, if they're positive. For instance, a BRCA1 or BRCA2 gene, they may carry upwards of a 40% or higher lifetime risk for the development of breast cancer. That allows us to have a conversation with them about what their choices are for managing that risk. There are surgical prophylactic choices, medical prophylactic choices, and then just close observation. There's no right answer to what to do. It really is heavily dependent on what the patient's preferences are, but you can't really even address the risk unless you know it's there. Then other mutations have different levels of risk. Many of them translate into a similar follow-up plan to a patient who has a greater than 20% lifetime risk, where you just follow them annually, do a mammogram and MRI each year, and the idea being that if they develop a cancer, you find it early.
Now, in many cases, during treatment of somebody with breast cancer, the whole family's involved, all the way back to genetic testing when there might be a higher risk individual involved. Do you also involve the family? Does this, if the woman chooses, of course?
Absolutely. One of the values of genetic testing is that you not only identify their risk, but you identify a family risk. And so patients who test positive for a mutation, their primary relatives can be tested free of charge within 90 days of that test, and their primary relatives should be tested.
Okay, so yeah, this is that's not just information you're passing along. This is risk information that really, it's compelling that you would pass it along. You are doing or started doing the MAG seed process there. Explain what that is exactly to our audience.
Certainly. It's just a little bit of a change from what we've always done. We've always used radionuclide to which is a radioactive marker to identify the lymph nodes that we need to biopsy. Technology changed in the past few years, and we decided to upgrade that technology. MagSeed is a magnetic seed that's placed at the tumor site that allows us to identify the tumor. And then along with that, there's a magnetic liquid, which is an iron oxide solution that we inject that travels to the lymph node and labels the lymph node. So with the same platform, we're able to identify the tumor site as well as the lymph nodes that need to be biopsied. This was very important because in many cases, when we have diagnosed a breast cancer that has a lymph node involvement at the time of diagnosis, those patients get chemotherapy first before surgery. And then the management of the lymph nodes becomes very specific after that. And we need to be able to identify the lymph node that was originally biopsied, and the MAG seed really comes in and helps us in that situation.
That stays there and will always tell you the exact location.
Which stays there until the surgery, and then one of the tenets of an adequate lymph node surgery after chemotherapy for a positive lymph node is that you have to prove that you obtained the originally biopsied lymph node and that it's negative, and you have to have two additional lymph nodes. And when we place the MAG seed at the site of the originally biopsied lymph node,
how do you do that?
The day before surgery, we identify that lymph node because we left a marker that's a titanium coil at that site. That marker can be very difficult to find once you've made an incision. So the day before surgery, we, under ultrasound guidance, we place the MAG seed marker right next to that marker. Then in the operating room, we can identify the MAG seed and remove that lymph node. Of course, the MAG seed comes out with the lymph node, and then we x-ray that tissue to make sure that we got that originally biopsied lymph node. That allows us to meet the criteria criteria for lymph node identification after that, and potentially avoid removing all the lymph nodes. And of course, I think we've talked about the fact that the problem with lymph node surgery is lymphedema, or swelling of the arm. A lot of what we do is to certainly the first tenet is to do an adequate cancer procedure, but the second is to not cause additional problems for the patient, such as lymphedema. Lymphedema is swelling of the arm, and you may have seen some patients who have had to wear compression sleeves on their arm. That's the reason for that. If you know the actress Kathy Bates, she had a bilateral mastectomy. She was Miss Sue on The Blind Side, and she developed bilateral lymphedema and travels the world now speaking about lymphedema.
Right. Okay. Well, we have heard that, particularly this month. That's popped up again. And all the while, this particular treatment and this testing and this surgery and this follow-up are happening at the Thyram Humphrey Center for Breast Health. It's comprehensive. You're getting counseling, assistance, help with child care for short times anyway. But, whatever it takes to super serve this woman, that's what you guys are doing.
Yes, sir.
Okay, so that's happening up there. As we paint the valley pink, we're talking to Dr. John Turner from Thyram Humphrey Center for Breast Health at Evangelical Community Hospital. What else is new? I usually start out interviews that way, but what else is cooking? The MagSeed conversation's new to me, so that's happening. What else is brand new?
Well, that's really the newest thing. We've been working on that. We've been working on the other thing that we have done in the past couple of years that is somewhat new is something called a PEC block, which gives excellent post-operative pain control for our patients. Our anesthesiologists do a great job with that. I just met with them last night to talk about our data on that. And what our data is showing is that when patients receive the PEC block, which is a numbing medication that's administered between the muscles of the chest wall that gives excellent post-operative pain relief, We saw that our statistics are revealing that 70% of our patients are using no narcotics after their surgery, and that includes mastectomies. I have had bilateral mastectomy patients that have had reconstruction and come in and say they never had trouble sleeping, they never used any narcotics, and it's amazing what the anesthesiologists are doing for
us. Well, that's so important today in this environment. People, I'm going to say probably sexist, but women worry about this. You know what Oxy has done to our whole society, and people don't want to use any extra. Well, that is our time. Is there anything else you'd like to, super critical, you'd like to add that maybe I didn't ask you?
No, I just thank you folks for doing what you do here. It really does help to get the word out. And if we can just get one diagnosis that we would have otherwise missed, that's worth it.
Hey, my pleasure. Beats working, you know. So thank you so much for coming in. Thank you, sir.
Thank you, Mark.
Dr. John Turner, a breast surgeon and clinical co-manager of the Thyram Humphrey Center for Breast Health at Evangelical Community Hospital, part of our Paint the Valley Pink initiative. You can see our coverage at WKOK.com and all of our information in the activities. And, of course, always information you need on this subject at evanhospital.com. We thank Deanna Hollenbach gets producer credits today for having really pulled together the guests and the questions and to make sure that we're I already knew a little bit about what was new, so we always appreciate her help and hard work.